Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky. Welcome back. And this morning, this afternoon, whenever you're listening to this program, we have a very interesting woman, a very, very fascinating person, Ruchi Freier, who actually happens to be here in the studio, which doesn't happen too often because, one, I really come to the studio, and two, very rarely do people actually come into the studio when I do come. So, Ruchi, it's great to have you here, and I really appreciate your coming in today.
Thank you so much. It's really my pleasure.
And, you know, I've been reading a lot about you, and I guess many of the people in the listening audience probably don't know that much about you. So you have a fascinating background, Hasidic background, mother of
six children, Kinahara,
and an attorney representing many, many different people. Why don't you just give us a little bit of a background? Because certainly, you know, your life story is a little different than many of the other Hasidic women that we normally meet, correct?
Okay, sure. So I'll share a bit of my background with you. I went to Bais Yaakov Elementary School and High School. I graduated in 1982. I had wonderful seminary teachers, and they basically instilled in us the concept of everyone having a Tzolem Elokim, everybody going out there making a Kiddush Hashem, and basically that we have our Torah, we have our rules, but we also have limitless opportunities to make a Kiddush Hashem. And I remember thinking to myself, well, what am I going to be? What can I possibly do? And I figured I'm just like any other girl in my class. But I did know that I wanted to marry someone who was going to sit and learn. And my husband, who's a big Talmud Chacham, still learns a half a day. He was a Kol guy. You know, he was a yeshiva boy. He was going to sit in Kaidel, and I was going to support him. I had taken.
What were you planning on doing? Yeah, right.
Okay, so I seriously thought about that when I was in high school. And in those years back in the early 80s and the late 1970s, there was no really opportunity for a girl to go to college. And I was going to completely follow our tradition and our customs. My high school offered then a course in legal stenography. I took the course in my senior year, and I got a job working as a legal secretary. And I, Baruch Hashem, earned well.
In Manhattan or in
Baltimore? I fluctuated. I went once. At some points, I was in Manhattan. Some points, I was in Brooklyn. But by and large, most of the years, to get real good jobs with good pay, I was in Manhattan. And my husband was sitting and learning. And then it reached a point where it was after 10 years of him being in Kaidel.
You were continuing to work during that period?
I was working all those years, yeah.
Full-time or?
Full-time, yeah.
Really? Okay.
I was having my children.
Having your children, working full-time.
Yeah, yes.
Supporting your husband.
Right. And it was Baruch Hashem. It was hard work, but it was very gratifying work. And then I remember my husband was thinking to himself at a certain point that, you know, it's time for him to start looking for some parnasa. And he opened up the newspapers and said, Ruchi, all I'm qualified to do really is to be a Rebbe in camp. So I said, you know, Tzedavid, how about you going to Torah College, getting a degree? And he did. And he was doing it. He worked hard. He got his bachelor's in accounting. And then his plan was, we didn't really know what it would turn out to be, but he's doing now mortgages, real estate and mortgages. But I remember, Steve, at his graduation of Torah College, I sat down there in the audience thinking to myself, Ruchi, now it's your turn. Now it's your turn. Now you go. Now you do it. And then I remember it was a certain point in my life where I realized I am working for lawyers who are younger than me. And, you know, I am basically telling them things that they don't know yet. And I said, maybe it's possible. Maybe I can go to law school. But it was such a pie in the sky, I figured I have to first get through college. And I had a wonderful experience at Torah College. Dean Goldschmidt was one of my mentors. He was really very supportive. And when I told him that I really would love to go to law school, he was very helpful.
How long did it take you to get through college?
6.5 years.
Going at night, weekends?
Right. I was 30 when I started. I had my three first children, my three boys. By the time I graduated, I had my three girls as well.
Okay.
And I never thought I would do it, but Chas Tei Hashem, I did it. And I was able to get into Brooklyn Law School. I had a very good experience there as well. I was close with one of the deans over there who really helped make it possible for me. And that's it. That's really my story.
How was it looked upon in the community that you are now embarking on this whole new path that was probably... There probably weren't that many other people who were doing the same thing you were doing, right?
Correct. Yeah, you are right. You see, Steve, I was known as a legal secretary. People knew that I worked for lawyers. And plus, I was like, it wasn't like no one knew what I was doing in terms of going to school. And my husband was still learning and my kids were good from kids. So while I was maybe doing something that seemed a little bit off the beaten path, I was still raising my from Hasidic family and still being very much part of my Hasidic community. It wasn't like I was disappointed or disenchanted. I love it. I think that it's a beautiful way of life. I love what it offers my family. I love what it offers me. And I really took the positive out of it. It was, for me, it was hard when I realized I'm doing something different, but I said, I'm not going to compromise anything in my home.
So you were like, in other words, like you were on the derech, but the highway now became, instead of two lanes, maybe eight or nine lanes or something like that.
Yeah, and I davened hard, and I really was hoping that Hashem would help me, because I didn't want to compromise not one of my standards. And I still baked challah, still cooked supper every night. It took me longer than everybody else. It was a long, slow path, but I love what I'm doing.
And so in the community, in the Hasidic community now, are other people trying to emulate what you've done, or are you just kind of like, outside the realm?
No, in fact, I opened myself up to counseling people who have questions and careers and what to do. In fact, I've started a GED program for young Hasidic young men who graduated from yeshiva or who've left yeshiva and spent time in Kotel but never got a high school diploma. And I'm opening it up for women as well. So I really want to be the one to help people in my community who want to pursue degrees or careers and learn how to do it without compromising our standards. So it's not, I don't think I'm looked at as doing something that was counter to our standards.
So you don't think that you don't think you have to compromise at all?
Absolutely not. No.
And yet you could kind of remain within the Hasidic world, and yet kind of transform yourself into the secular world for, you know, your business and everything else that you do, and you're enjoying it.
I love it. Now, when I say compromise, you don't have to compromise, and I never compromise my values, but there are other compromises that I will make. For example, when I was in law school, I knew that I was not going to be the top 10%. I wasn't even going to try to make law review because it would require too much out of me. So yes, I made compromises, but not from my family and not on my Yiddishkeit.
Okay. And so once you finished, you went into your own practice or you went to work for someone else?
No, my own practice. First of all, by the time I graduated law school, I was already past my 40th birthday.
Right.
So I felt I was too old to start working for somebody and to start at the bottom. And I had also built a reputation for myself. At this point, many people knew me with all my years of real estate experience. So interestingly enough, when I was still in law school, I was already practicing under attorney supervision, but my main practice is up in Monroe in Kiryas Yo.
Uh-huh. So now, how did that work? I mean, you live in Borough Park, and you also live there also, right?
You know, every part of my story is another proof of Siyata Deshmai and how things can really happen if Hashem wants it to happen. Because people always tell me, Ruchi, you're a Hasidish, and you're going to law school. Who is going to come to you? You're not going to even have a practice. And I would say, even if I don't have one client, I need to know that I did it. I don't want to be an old lady thinking to myself, I should have tried. So I was, I have a summer bungalow up in Monroe, And while I was doing my undergrad, I would spend time in the courthouse in Brooklyn. My uncle's a judge. I don't know if you know him. His name is David Schmidt. So he's a judge in Supreme Kings, and he's also one of my mentors. And I would spend lots of time in his courtroom while I was doing my undergrad.
And he's Hasidic?
Also? Yeah.
Really? He's a judge.
Yeah, he's what you would call very frum. His children are, different levels of Hasidish, but definitely from Bar Pa community. So it was one summer, a good friend of mine said to me, Ruchi, you spend so much time in court in Brooklyn. Why don't you go to the courthouse here in Monroe? I said, that was a great idea. And I did. And I met some people that were from the Monroe Kiryas Yo community. And they asked me what I was doing there. And I said, I'm in law school. I'm here to learn. And the next day, they asked me to do work for them. And I explained to them that I wasn't even a lawyer yet. But I checked with my law professor, and he told me that I could work under lawyer supervision. And the fact that I'm Hasidish and I speak Yiddish was very helpful for them. And I love the community there. I have a wonderful relationship with the people there.
And so, but now, your practice has gone way beyond real estate. And I mean, I read about you, and I want to talk to you a little bit about what you've done with Hatzalah and other things you've done. So, I mean, is your practice still mostly real estate?
My practice is real estate.
Okay.
My pro bono work.
That means people who are buying and selling and transactions, you represent them in commercial
and
residential, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. I'm a transactional lawyer.
Okay.
But my pro bono work has really expanded and taken me into other horizons. Part of my deal was, Hashem, help me get through law school, and whatever I can do to help other from people, I will do. So what started out in 2008 as one woman asking me to help her with her son who had no yeshiva started out with my forming Bederach, which is a organization advocating for Hasidic youth. And I got involved in kids at risk in the community, and I got involved in many different areas of community activism in my community.
What do you think, just kind of digress just for 1 second, so what do you see as the biggest challenges in the Hasidic world, like now for the next generation, what do you see as the biggest challenges, and are they meeting those challenges, and how will they overcome those challenges?
Okay, so when you say the biggest challenge, I think we have to be a little bit more specific.
Okay.
Are you talking about the youth? Are you talking about the older generation, parents, grandparents, children? Because I'm really focusing on youth.
Okay.
So I would say the biggest challenge for the young men is earning a parnasa.
Okay. And how does it work? They go to school. They don't get a real serious secular education.
Right.
They finish their 18, 19, whatever it is. They probably get married at that point. And so how are they supposed to make a parnasa at that point?
So I think what happens is, our economy has changed a lot, significantly. Manufacturing has left the country. It's all overseas. And most of the Hasidic men were very successful in business and manufacturing, working in factories. And it didn't really matter if they had a good command of the English language. They were able to be successful businessmen because they were just, the Yiddish word is tichtig.
Yeah.
They just had that work ethic.
Yeah,
and
right.
So my father's generation, my father-in-law, my grandfather, they just worked hard and had good parnasa.
Right, right.
The young men today are not as lucky because manufacturing is no longer here. And today, without a good command of the English language, today it's the age of information and technology. So if you can't communicate, if you can't write, if you can't read fluently in the English language, you're really at a deficit.
Right.
So what I've done is, when I started to do work at Bederach, I realized that the kids that were falling away from the community, falling out of yeshiva, they were feeling that bump a lot harder because they weren't successful in yeshiva. And here they were, adolescents, looking for jobs with zero opportunities other than schlepping boxes in a warehouse.
Right, right.
So I started to find ways to get them their GED. And then it occurred to me, why just offer this program for kids that have fallen out of the system? Let me open it up for young men who are still in kollel, just getting married or past the kollel stage, and it's been very successful. There's been a big demand for it. So I think that probably is one of the biggest challenges facing the young men.
So are the school systems going to adapt at all, or are they really not going to change that much?
I think, in general, change in society has to always come from the bottom, not from the top.
Okay.
I studied political science. That was my major, and any great movement always came from the bottom. I don't want to even get involved with the school system because that's not my profession. That's
okay.
Not my. I'm not a mechaneches. I can't. But what I tried to do was make a program that would complement the yeshiva system. So if there's a parent who has a child and the parent says, "I know my child is not cut out to be in yeshiva all these hours," they call me and they put their kids into my program when their kid is even still single.
How long does the program last for?
So the program that I have, it's a combined GED and associate's degree program, and I'm doing it through Bramson Ort.
Okay.
It's a 16-month program.
Okay. And so when they finish that program, what are they able to do?
First of all, they have in their hands a GED, which is a high school equivalency, and they have an associate's degree. Depending on their major, which they've chosen, they can go get a job, whether it's as a junior accountant, whether it's business management, or whether it's computers. So they have much more life skills and vocational skills.
Okay. So that's great. So they're actually able to go out into the workplace and get jobs, regular
right.
jobs in society.
And I'm always there to always tell them, don't compromise your standards. I still don't shake hands with men, whether I'm in court. And it's, you know, I also tell them, don't be embarrassed, be proud.
Right.
Because when I take a stand, and I'll explain, Your Honor, I'm sorry, I'm Hasidic, I won't shake, I only get respect.
Right.
So I always tell people, the outside world really respects a person that sticks to their standards.
Right. As long as it's coupled with everything else. I mean, you know, to me, I always believe that, you know, you can't say, well, this is who I am. Because if you do that, then you also have this responsibility as a role model, and you have to take that seriously. So,
absolutely,
you know, if you're gonna be a frum Jew, doesn't make a difference whether it's whatever flavor frum Jew you want to call it. Okay, we all have the same Torah and the same mitzvahs and the same Shulchan Aruch. But I'm saying if you're gonna be that kind of a person, then you better be careful about how you act and how you talk and what you say and everything else you do, because you can't keep demanding, oh, I don't want this, I have to leave early this time, I only need special food, and then they say, well, that's the way a person acts. So I think that, you know, you're a great example of someone who's out there who, you know, who really, as they say, they talk the talk and walk the walk. You know, that's
You're right. When I worked at the large firms and I had to leave early on Fridays, I made up the time.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right, exactly. So, and what about the young ladies in the community? I mean, anything you're doing with them also, or is it mostly with the...
The education level for the girls is really very good.
Oh, really?
They're coming out with a good, solid education. Some schools will give a Regents diploma and some schools won't, but the education is there. The girls
really?
Coming out pretty good.
And in the Hasidic world, I know that, you know, in some of the other parts of the Frum world, we're dealing with shidduch issues, you know, trying to come to grips with this, trying to figure out what we're trying to do. What about in the Hasidic world? Is it this problem or not?
There may be a problem, but I don't think it's as severe as in the non-Hasidic world. For example, I have two married sons, so the shidduch process is... I look for the girl. The shadchan will call me. I'll see the girl before my son gets to see her. My son will be seen by the girl's parents. So by the time the girl and boy meet, we've vetted everything out, gone through all our research and information, and the kids really rely on us. It puts a lot more responsibility on the parents' shoulders. But as long as parents are realistic and they don't have demands that are just, you know, outrageous, then there is no crisis.
And there's also, in the Hasidic world, the your two sons, how old were they when they got married?
21.
Okay. And how old were the young women they married?
19.
Uh-huh. Okay. So that's, because I thought someone was telling me that, you know, that you have this, you don't have this disparity between ages, and that's why it's usually easier in the Hasidic world.
Yeah,
the yeshiva world, you know, the boys are going to Israel, whatever it is, they're coming back, they're 22, 23, 24, and they want to marry 19-year-old girls, and so that's the problem, and that's how we're trying to do it.
Yeah, another benefit you have in the Hasidic world is very often the girls are older than the boys, and it's not even a problem.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
That's fantastic.
I mean, when the shidduch suggested for one of my boys, the girl, up to a year, it's really... makes no difference to
really?
Me.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's great. They live in your community, your two sons? Who
yeah,
are
in Borough Park, yes.
And so are they going to be getting a secular education at some point also? Or?
Oh, sure. They're going to be doing. I mean, first we start off, they start off in Kailal. And my first married son, who's married already more than two years, so he's looking into something and he's doing something and he's trying, but he's still learning part of the time and we're
right.
there to help him.
That's great. Okay, so now, you have your practice, and you do a lot of pro bono, and you did some things to help the community as far as the young men. How did you get involved in this thing I read about with the whole thing with Hatzolah, and this lawsuit that they want that they have?
There's no lawsuit. Absolutely not.
But it doesn't like there's a lot of like it sounds like a little bit of bad blood from the quotes. I could be wrong. I mean, you know, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Tell me.
No, I don't want to say there's bad blood. I think there are issues, and I want to remain very positive, and I have to be realistic, but I also have a lot of women who want something, and I think that they have a very valid point, and I'm advocating for them.
So what's the next step? What has to happen now?
Okay, so you want to backtrack? Should I start off how I got involved?
Yeah,
so it was this past June, I got a phone call out of the blue from a young woman who told me that she's an EMT and she'd like to meet with me. She actually got my name from the Mishpacha magazine.
Oh, sure.
Because the Mishpacha had written about these women, these EMTs, and the Mishpacha had written about me a couple of years earlier. And what they told her is they said the Mishpacha had interviewed these women EMTs and wrote their story, how originally when Hatzalah was formed back, you know, 30, 40 years ago, the original founders had, the intent was a women's division to help for women, especially in emergency childbirth,
okay.
And a men's division for the men. And by 1981, there were 300 women that were trained EMTs to be part of Hatzalah. And then there were some, you know, some calls that came down from Williamsburg that it's not tznius and that these women cannot join. The women were silenced. They really were given no option. And Hatzalah was doing a very good job, so everybody kept quiet. These women who were EMT, so you had 300 who were trained back up in the late 70s and early 80s.
Right.
They've always been thinking about it. It was always their dream. And I understand their passion because I have a passion for the law. I understand what it means when you have a passion and you don't have an opportunity to manifest that passion for the good. These are women who are EMTs, and many of them are doulas as well. And they just want to be there for emergency childbirth when it happens. And it happens more often than people know. I think in Brooklyn alone, it happens about 100 times a year when there are Hatzalah deliveries of women in labor.
Why can't they just take care of women when women call, Why can't they just go out and dispatch them to take care of any situation? Why is it only for this particular, like, you know, childbirth?
Because I'm not here to go and make demands to change a policy that's been in place. I'm here to say that, you know, at least in this one area where, okay, you know, it's not cardiac arrest, where it's something that women are very experienced in, and it's something that we want to do, and the women want, and also, someone, if a woman has a broken foot or cardiac arrest or anything, it's not as her sinus is not as violated as when she's in labor.
Okay. She's
not as exposed. And what has happened was, the women were sent out. They were not allowed to be part of Hatzalah. And stories would surface that there was a woman that had a labor emergency and, you know, five men would come, or sometimes more than five men would come, sometimes six, sometimes seven, because there's two lives at stake. And the women were humiliated, and the women were traumatized. And it's also a situation where women don't come forward, they don't talk about it. It's you know, studies have shown they want to get over it, they want to get past it, and they don't want to be reminded of the humiliation. And then again, someone came and helped them. They were helped, they were needy, so why call and why ask for anything to be changed?
Right.
And I've actually gone and spoken to many of these women to ask them about their experiences, and they would say, don't use my name, I don't want to talk about it, you know, but if you can have women helping women, based on my experience, it will be a much better situation.
Are these Hasidic women or just...
Yes.
Just old Hasidic, mostly.
I'm dealing right now with
these are Hasidic women who want to go out and do this in... Primarily Borough Park,
Flatbush, Williamsburg, Monroe. This is the area.
Oh, so it's not Flatbush. It's really mostly Borough Park, Monroe, Williamsburg. Okay.
This is where we're...
Okay.
This is the hook.
Okay.
Now, let me tell you something else that happened. 4 years ago in the village of New Square, the Rebbe started a policy where he said women should join Hatzalah for emergency childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and Hatzalah of Muncie and New Square were one unit at that point. And Hatzalah of Muncie said, no, we don't want to go along with this ruling. So they split. So Hatzalah of New Square is the only Hatzalah that has about a dozen women who are part of Hatzalah. They're only there for emergency childbirth. I met the Rebbe twice.
Right.
And he's so proud of these women, and they're doing a fantastic job. They handle situations where their quarters are around the baby's neck. And the Rebbe said these women are doing great. He would even want them to do more than just emergency childbirth.
So the same dispatcher who dispatches the Hatzalah members, if there's an emergency call or a woman is in childbirth, will call them as opposed to calling the other...
See, the way I could tell you what I understand how it works in New Square, and every community that would
right.
implement such a program would have to do it based on their logistics. Like,
okay.
You know, but the way it's done in New Square, now remember, in New Square, women don't drive.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So you have a lot of hurdles there. Women don't drive.
Wow.
And the distance to the hospital is much longer than in Borough Park going to Maimonides, because you have going from New Square to Mount Sinai Hospital in Manhattan.
Okay.
So the women there have to really work very hard, and they do.
How do they get there then?
So there, when the call comes in, Hatzalah will dispatch the woman who's on call as well as the men. And it's the women arrive there and the men arrive there.
How do they get there if they don't drive?
The women are either picked up or they get there or the ambulance
okay.
picks them up on the way going out
okay.
to the hospital.
Okay.
But it's the woman who takes care of the women.
Okay.
Keeping her covered so she's not exposed to any of the men. And she's there to comfort the woman and
gotcha.
Deliver if necessary.
Okay.
And I spoke to a woman, I met her 2 weeks ago at a wedding. She had two deliveries that day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're doing a fantastic job.
So you
job.
Want to do the same thing now in Borough Park and in Williamsburg. You'd like to get the same thing going. So what do you think the chances are of it happening?
Well, Hatzalah has made it very clear that their policy is not to allow women. They've given me a number of reasons. They said for modesty reasons, women shouldn't be joining. And I said, well, you know, then it's modesty versus modesty, because the modesty of women driving in an ambulance together with a man, to me, seems not as significant as a woman being delivered by groups of men. Then I was told that the other concern is that there'll be a delay in service. And then I was told that women aren't capable. So
they can't lift heavy. I saw that. I read that.
But
someplace.
You know something. I've been speaking to many EMTs, and it's not about physical strength. Today there's equipment that's hydraulic. It's all about it's about training. It's
right.
not about strength.
Right.
And there's no one man who could really come and lift up a woman himself.
So where's the opposition? Is it from the national headquarters of Hatzalah? Is it from the local community or?
From what I understand, the Hatzalah has their own hierarchy. They have their own decision makers, and it's from their decision makers.
So
we know we're exploring another option.
Which is?
We are exploring. What we are exploring is having our own unit, having women their own unit.
So you have your own unit, your own dispatcher.
Right.
And women know that if they have an emergency, they just call them and
We'll be working with the OBGYNs in the community, give out a phone number, and it's the woman's option to call either Hatzalah or to call the Ezras Nashim, which is a group of these women, EMTs, doulas. Women are so trained. We have women who are RNs, women who are OBGYNs, women who are midwives, women who are doulas.
They all want
to be part
of it. So how is this being accepted by the other parts of the community, that women may form their own group and this will be an independent entity?
You know something, Steve? Everyone is taking this wait-and-see approach.
Okay.
Let's wait and see what they can do. Let's wait and see. And nobody wants to, quote-unquote, challenge or fight Hatzalah, and neither do I.
I got you.
Hatzalah is a great organization.
Right, of course. Right.
They do great work.
Right.
I when I first contacted them, I was sure that there would be something to discuss and work out with them. And I figured if it's being done in New Square, and by the way, Hatzalah in Israel has women, I figured it may not be something that's simple to accomplish, but at least we could sit down. And remember, I'm a transactional lawyer.
Right.
I'm used to sitting down, negotiating, and making deals.
Right.
And at a certain point, I realized, you know something? Just go and start something completely independent. And that's where I'm holding at right now.
Well, it's really, really fascinating. I mean, you're getting the support of
Rabbanim, 100%.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Great.
Rabbanim feel that it's wonderful.
Terrific.
And they feel, and you know what? they have told me, don't even limit it to childbirth.
I was going to say, I mean, doesn't it seem logical if you start your own unit? I mean, look, I think, you know, if you start your own unit, I mean, if there's a woman, and God forbid there's an emergency, she's going to feel more comfortable having women come, trained, specialized, more caring, more concerned. To me, it's just logical. I mean, you know.
I know. That's why I thought it would be something simple to implement.
Right.
But, you know, when you have an organization that's entrenched in a certain policy, you're talking about 40 years. I understand. And you know something? People thought that because I'm a lawyer, we're going towards the avenue of litigation. I said, there's no litigation here. That's not what we're doing right now. We want this to happen.
Gotcha.
We're going to find a way.
Okay. Well, listen, you're a transactional lawyer, so you'll get it done. Ruchi, I could stay here for hours and talk to you because you're such a fascinating, fascinating person. And we're going to follow the story to see what happens. And
Yitz
Hashem, have you back on the program maybe, some other date, and we'll see what happens. But I think the listening audience is really in for a treat because they're getting a chance to see a Renaissance person who has kept her values, kept her tradition, but yet, at the same time, you know, is making a real mark, and I think will be a trailblazer for other women in the Hasidic world who will say, hey, if Ruchi could do it, I could do it. So thank you so much for coming on the
program.
Thank
you for having me here.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.